As the legislature continues to examine the effect of the pandemic on aspects of life in New York, on Tuesday, the state Senate looked into what this public health crisis has meant for New York's prisons. To discuss what came up at this week's hearing and what actions lawmakers might need to take in the future, we're joined by State Senator Luis Sepulveda, a Bronx Democrat who is chair of the Chamber's Committee on Crime Victims, Crime, and Corrections. Welcome back to the show, Senator.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here. Always happy to be on your show to discuss important issues in the community.
Well, we appreciate it. So based on Tuesday's hearing, where you heard from advocates as well as state corrections officials, did the state's prisons do enough to protect their inmate population from the spread of COVID-19 over the last 6 months?
Well, I mean, the complete answer to that will be determined in the near future when we get more information and more data about infection rates, and so forth. Right now, one of the issues that I think we have, the advocates have, is that we don't get a lot of immediate information from docs and from the city of New York with their incarceration system. So that makes it harder for us to ascertain whether or not the state has done enough. Now, Commissioner Annucci from the state system has indicated that the infection rate in their incarceration systems were a lot lower than other states. However, when I asked him about the fact that most other states have tested their incarcerated individuals a lot greater numbers than we have in New York, he said that he doesn't agree with that because every state has different protocols. Now, I don't know what he meant by that. No matter what protocols you have, either you test the same amount or you don't. And so that was a little confusing to me. I don't believe, got a direct answer. Look, I believe that I've had individual discussions with Commissioner Annucci and the governor and so forth about our systems. And, you know, unlike some people may believe, I believe that they generally care about humanity and care about the individuals that are incarcerated. However, they have to rely on their information from other sources. So the governor has to rely on Commissioner Annucci has to rely with thousands of personnel that are under his jurisdiction to get all the answers that we need. And so what the hearings indicated was that there seems to be a divide of information. Some of the advocates, some of the individuals that are formerly incarcerated testified in ways that were a little troubling to me and my co-chair, Senator Gustavo Rivera, about some of the things that they experienced. We had three gentlemen who were recently released. They were incarcerated for many years. One as late as August, who said that the use of masks, PPEs, and social distancing was almost impossible in the facility he was in, and that the corrections officers are not using masks the way the commissioner indicated. At the city level, I asked the assistant commissioner, as Commissioner Brand didn't come and testify, she indicated that she had a hearing, court proceeding. I don't necessarily buy that. I think we could have made arrangements to have her come in later if needed. But be that as it may, they testified that the use of face masks at the city systems was optional. You know, I was completely floored by that response. Because, I mean, first of all, the corrections officers have to sue the city of New York to get PPEs. And once they get them, you tell me that you make it optional? I mean, it just didn't make any sense. I asked if any, at the state level, if any corrections officer or incarcerated individual had been cited, fined, or whatever they do when you break the rules, and the commissioner indicated no one had been fined. So I cannot accept that with so many thousands of corrections officers and so many facilities that everyone has followed the rules every single day. It just doesn't make sense. It's strange credulity. So that was some of the troubling stuff. When we spoke with some of the advocates that have been in there, they've also, their information is inconsistent what we get from the from docs and from the city. So if anything, the hearing showed yesterday is that there's a lot of either misinformation or information is not getting back to the heads of the agencies. Because what I heard from formerly incarcerated from advocates doesn't jive with some of the information we got from docs and from the city.
Why do you think there are such contrasting narratives coming from prison officials as opposed to from advocates and former inmates? Because that's been a pretty consistent theme during this entire pandemic, the description of what's going on and what steps are being taken really you know, don't sound the same depending on who you're hearing it from?
Well, you know, the agencies, the city agencies, the commissioners, they don't want to look bad. Certainly the second floor, the governor doesn't want to look bad. And so it's almost inherent upon them to offer a sunnier disposition about what's going on than maybe the actual reality. Look, there's no doubt that our infection rates are lower in our facilities than some other states where you have seen COVID ravage facilities. But could we have done more? And now I believe, if you look in Western New York, where it is the correctional officers and staff that are bringing in COVID to the facilities, not the other way around. So what happens now in the winter when people are closer in space, when they're home, and they're sharing airspace, if there's a second surge, then I'm concerned about what will happen to facilities if we haven't taken the steps. We've asked what steps have been taken, and both Commissioner Nucci and the Assistant Commissioner for the City of New York indicated their steps are being taken. The Commissioner Nucci said that in Western New York, where you seem to have an outbreak, that they're testing more people. I believe he said up to date, they have tested 13,000 individuals that are incarcerated. There are about 33,000 now individuals that are incarcerated. That tells me over 20,000 people have not been tested. The testing results usually take about 10 days. So in 10 days, it renders, if you ask me, it renders those tests completely a nullity because you can get infected and within 14 days later find out that you're infected. So the results of the test take much too long. 20,000 people have not been tested. And by the way, as you know, there's no evidence, scientific data of herd immunity. So you can be positive now, get over it, and then be reinfected. So I don't know what amenities preparation they're doing in that case. But if they don't do enough, we're going to see numbers that parallel those that are in southern states and correction facilities that tend to treat individuals that are incarcerated less humanely than certainly we do here in New York.
We're speaking with State Senator Luis Sepulveda, a Bronx Democrat and chair of the Senate's Corrections Committee, who was part of a hearing this week to examine the ramifications of COVID-19 on New York's prisons. So looking forward, we're anxiously awaiting a vaccine for COVID-19, and we have a general idea of how that will roll out with initial priority to essential workers and vulnerable populations. But do you have any idea of how distribution will occur in prisons?
Interesting that you ask, Dave, because one of the questions that my colleague, Senator Brad Portman, asked was just in general with our vaccine, now that the flu season is coming, whether we have sufficient for our incarcerated population, and the response was that we don't, we have to ration it out. And Senator Horman rightly said that is unacceptable. So if we're not prepared for influenza, how are we going to be prepared for COVID if there's a vaccine? We don't know.
Are there any appropriate legislative responses to this hearing?
We're looking at one of the things that we're making sure that we're going to do is we're going to, through a fine-tooth comb, we're going to go through all of the testimony. Fortunately, everyone provided written testimony. So that gives us an opportunity to go through it meticulously with my legislative director, with Senator Gustavo's legislative director, our staff, and see what legislative actions we can take that are appropriate. I believe there are. You know, I want to make sure that we leave no stone unturned because the incarcerated population is one of the most marginalized populations in our society. And so if people that are in correction facilities are dying from COVID or getting severe illnesses as a result of it, it's unfortunate our society doesn't pay as much attention to that as if a person who hasn't committed a crime is infected. But you have to have advocates. You have to have individuals like myself who chairs this committee that, I have a genuine concern for people in general. And I want to make sure that we protect them. And I also am concerned about the corrections officers, the medical staff. You know, you have employees from PEF. You have several unions that are in our facilities. And I'm concerned about corrections officers infecting the population of incarcerated individuals, and then they infect the rest of the staff and personnel. And then they go home and they have families, and, you know, the people can die if they're vulnerable, or children can get infected. So we have to make sure that we change our mindset about what we believe about individuals that have committed crimes and are incarcerated, and think of them as human beings and the fact that they can infect other people within our communities.
One of the other items that came up during your hearing was the controversial practice of double bunking, and the administration has sort of tipped their hand, saying that they're going to scale back and potentially eliminate the use of double bunking, putting multiple inmates into, you know, a single enclosed space. Do you think this is a meaningful policy change?
Well, I believe anything. I mean, look, I have the double bunking bill is my bill, and I believe that my colleagues have brought that up more for a little self-aggrandizement rather than dealing with how it impacts COVID. And I have to correct them and say this is about COVID and not about knocking any particular policy that the governor or us as Democrats, who now are the majority in the Senate. But I have a double bunking bill that Senator Gallivan, interestingly enough, had that bill for several years before the Democrats became the majority. So it's interesting that some of the Republican senators brought that up, yet Senator Gallivan had it for several years and they never passed it. But I believe we're going to pass that double bunking bill. And administratively, they're going to start doing that. The best way to decrease the potential for massive infections is A, decarcerating, like releasing all the prisoners, you know, the RAP. You can do medical issues. People that are vulnerable population can be released if they're within a certain number of months of their release anyway. So you could have early medical release. Double bunking can be another way of making sure that we essentially decrease exposure, people being in close quarters and exposure to COVID. So yes, it's meaningful, it would be helpful, but there are a lot of other ways that could be more helpful, and that is essentially decarcerating the population. And right now, you know, we have about 20,000 vacant beds. We have the lowest population of incarcerated individuals in the history of the state. So we have to lower that even more, because if we were a maximal capacity, approximately 50-something thousand beds, we would have a crisis right now. And I think we've been lucky and fortunate that we have lowered the population of individuals that are incarcerated, and that had a direct impact in making sure that COVID didn't become a bigger issue within our facilities than other facilities in other states.
So do you anticipate the legislature will codify the end of double bunking, or will you guys let it just happen administratively?
No, it is my objective to codify it. If they do it administratively, then they really have no excuse. The governor has no excuse to sign a bill. When you rely on administrative rules, you rely on administrative rules. You rely on the commissioner at that time. You rely on the governor. I'd rather have it legislatively so that no doubt about it being law and no one, either, you know, future governors, unless another party, the Republican Party, returns to the majority and somehow wants to nullify that and bring back the old system. I don't believe that they want it. I don't believe that either party wants double bunking. But if you put it through legislative fiat, then it decreases the possibility of the policy being at the whim of the commissioner or the governor at the time.
Well, we've been speaking with State Senator Luis Sepulveda. Senator, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, and always a pleasure to be on your show. It's one of the best shows that talks about political issues in the state of New York. So continue the great work, David.
Thanks, Senator.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.